College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, where we will break down the ACC from soup to nuts. Later in the show, we will be joined by Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams. Want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes and give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. But first, I want to let you know that we are brought to you by Harry's. Stop compromising on your shave and get started with Harry's today. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you've settled for a low-priced but low-quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. As you've heard me talk before, I enjoy a great shave with Harry's every morning. The blades are super sharp and provide a close, comfortable shave. Plus, their moisturizing shaving cream is great. Harry's Starter Set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shaving cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's HARRYS.com. Enter code HOOPS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. Now that we've got you all set up for your upcoming shave, we will now dive in to the ACC as we dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on what has become unequivocally the best conference in college basketball. So, as I wake up right now during the summer months and I think about what storylines are going to emerge this week in college basketball, as I sink my teeth into the ACC, this is what I think. The ACC has become the old Big East, and I'm not saying that the ACC is going to get 11 teams into the NCAA tournament in 2017 like the old Big East did in 2011, but I think we are headed right now for a year in which the ACC can get 9 to maybe 10 teams in the NCAA tournament. Now, why do I say that? When you think about the landscape of college basketball right now, and you look at other conferences, especially conferences that have not been well represented in the NCAA tournament, you have to think that better teams in the ACC are going to have a greater chance of eating up those last at-large bids, and this is what I'm thinking about right now. When I look at the American Conference, I see two top 25 teams in Cincinnati and UConn, and after that, I see nothing but a mystery. What happens at SMU after Larry Brown's departure? What happens at Memphis under Tubby Smith? Can Houston get to the NCAA tournament? I see questions. I don't see questions in the ACC. You look at the SEC. Who is a legitimate NCAA tournament team next year that's a guarantee other than Kentucky? I don't have one. I think it's going to be Florida, and we'll get into that when we dissect the SEC in a couple of weeks, but there's no guarantees. When I look at the ACC, I see known commodities. I see teams that have the goods to not just make the NCAA tournament, but advance in the NCAA tournament. And I'm not just talking about the creme de la creme. I'm not just talking about Duke, Virginia, Carolina, and Louisville. And I'm willing to go on the record right now and say this. The ACC, to me, for teams 1 through 12 next season, will be the most competitive league that I have covered since I've been covering college basketball. Because right now what you have is 12 teams, in my opinion, that are going to roll out the balls next October or in late September and start their season and start to think about the fact that they have a legitimate chance to play in the NCAA tournament. Now, if 12 teams are going to begin their season that way, what are the other three teams going to do? Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, BC, still far away from consideration, in my opinion, from the other 12 teams in the ACC that have a chance to compete for an NCAA tournament bid. Wake Forest showed signs last year in Maui. They had a good win at LSU in the non-conference portion of the schedule, but they're still too inconsistent to be taken seriously as a tournament contender. And BC and Georgia Tech are still in massive rebuilding situations. But the other 12 teams in that conference look to me as capable NCAA contenders for 2017. And just the fact that 5 through 12 is interchangeable is going to make every night in conference play that much more appetizing. Now, we're going to break down everything you need to know about the league later in the podcast, but if there's one storyline to get to, on top of what we've already discussed, it's the fact that Duke has a chance, in my opinion, to have a season on par to what Kentucky did in 2014-15 when the Wildcats ran the table, won 38 straight games, and then lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin, finished the season 38-1. Now, I don't think Duke is going to go undefeated because the ACC is too tough a conference, especially on the road. But when you look right now at Duke's personnel, this is what you're getting. You're getting four guys that are projected to be first-round picks in 2017. Grayson Allen, Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, and Frank Jackson. You're getting a guy coming back in Emil Jefferson from a foot injury that Mike Krzyzewski told me in June, okay, was playing by far the best basketball out of anybody on their team last year when he got hurt. Mike Krzyzewski has told me that his message to Emil Jefferson is simple: be our Draymond Green. And that's not even counting Marquise Bolden, another highly talented freshman that's going to play. It's not counting Luke Kennard, who averaged double figures last year as a freshman. It's not counting Matt Jones, okay, who made 76 three-point shots last year and had a major hand in Duke winning the 2015 national championship. If you don't remember Matt Jones in the Elite Eight against Gonzaga, you are forgetting a player that was a pivotal role player for the Blue Devils. And you have a coach that has always, always been able to push the right buttons mentally. And here's something that I think people need to look at when they look at the psychological aspect of Duke. How is Duke going to keep everybody happy? How is Grayson Allen going to shoot less but be in a situation where he might be willing to pass more? When you look at Duke's chemical makeup and you see Allen and Frank Jackson, who I loved last year on the AAU circuit, and Tatum and Giles and Jefferson, how are they going to make it all work? I firmly believe that by coaching in the Olympics and dealing with so many high-profile guys, Mike Krzyzewski is so much better suited. Not that he needed to be better suited, but I feel that the Olympic experience and dealing with essentially a dream team is going to make him better suited to coach the type of team that he's going to coach. Because you think back to Duke's national championship teams in the early 90s, the Hurley, Leitner, Grant Hill team was like a college all-star team, but players didn't leave early for the NBA the way they do now. In 2001, with Jay Williams and Shane Battier, it was a college team that had been together for a couple of years. But again, it wasn't a situation where you were going to see talent on type of talent like you're going to see next year. In 2001, Jay Williams and Mike Dunleavy and Chris Duhon came back to school after they won the national championship. You better believe today things would have been different. And in 2010, you look at the Duke team that won a national championship by beating Butler in Indianapolis. That was a team, okay, that was made of college veterans. Singler, Shire, Nolan Smith, Lance Thomas, Brian Zubek. This Duke team is the bomb squad. Now, the 2015 team had Tyus Jones, Jahlil Okafor, and Justice Winslow, but this team has a depth factor that, in my opinion, usurps other Duke teams that we've seen in the past. Because right now, when you look at Duke and you break down Duke's roster from soup to nuts, this is what you're looking at. You got Frank Jackson and Grayson Allen in the backcourt. You've got Jason Tatum at a wing. You've got Jefferson and Giles up front. Giles, again, when healthy, I think, is by far the best prospect for the 2017 NBA draft. And then you have Luke Kennard, Matt Jones, and Marquise Bolden. That is your top eight. It is an embarrassment of riches when you talk about the Blue Devils. I don't think they're going undefeated, but I do expect them to be a heavy favorite entering the 2017 NCAA tournament, and I expect Duke again to win 30-plus games and have a chance to give Mike Krzyzewski his sixth national championship. Now, Duke is the blue blood program in the ACC and the upstart program in the ACC, in my opinion, is Virginia Tech. Their head coach, Buzz Williams, joins us next. This is the College Hoops Today podcast, breaking down the ACC with me, John Rothstein. The ACC is the best league in college basketball, and Virginia Tech had a breakthrough last year, winning 10 league games and advancing to the postseason NIT. And the head coach of the Hokies joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein right now. He is Buzz Williams. And Buzz, considering the state of Virginia Tech's program when you got the job a couple of years ago, do you think you're ahead of where you thought you'd be entering your third season in Blacksburg?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I don't know. I think the reason why I struggle with those types of questions, John, is I think when you're in the middle of trying to build or rebuild or whatever word you would want to use is in that type of question, when you're in the middle of it, you're so consumed with how can we improve right now? What are the decisions that we can make? What's the vision on where we want to go today? It's hard to know, did you skip a step? I think you can frame it in such a way that I don't think that in the history of the league has anybody ever improved eight games from last place. It's only happened three times in the league, period. We were the third one, but it's the first time that anybody's ever done it from last place. So when I look at it from that lens, I'm like, wow, that's really good. But I think what ends up happening is when you see the rest of the league and what you have to do and where you have to go, you realize how thin the margin is and how important today is relative to where we were 6 months ago and where we're going to be 6 months from now. But I think we're going in the right direction. I do think that.
You had a program at Marquette that was a perennial NCAA tournament team, and you left that to rebuild Virginia Tech. During the guts of the rebuilding process, did you ever take a deep breath and regret taking the job?
Absolutely not. I didn't take the job for any other reason other than I believe that's what I was supposed to do. I say that to you because that's my relationship with you, and that's why it's after the fact, but I think it's okay when it's 28 months down the road. That's why I answered every question, was on every radio show, every interview, because nothing went wrong at Marquette, and I'm incredibly grateful for my time there, what we were able to do, the relationships that were formed on and off the floor, and that's where my kids grew up, and so I'm very thankful for that. But at the same time, I came here because in my heart I believe that's what I was supposed to do, and not everybody looks at things like that, and I'm okay with that, but that's why every job, every decision, that's for that person. It's not for somebody else to judge. And I have never once at all thought back to the decision in a negative way. It's always been positive, not only positive in that I'm at Virginia Tech, but it's been positive in that I'm thankful that I was at Marquette. And so I don't function with that type of edge. I have an edge in how I coach and in how I lead and things of that nature. But when it comes to decisions like that, of that magnitude, there's never an edge. And so not one time. And I knew that we were going to be bad initially. I knew that when I arrived, and we were. We had to hit some balls off the top of our head in hopes that it went in just to win two games. And so to think that in year two that we won 10 games, I wasn't planning that either. But none of that had to do with my decision. My decision was in my heart. I believe that's what I was supposed to do.
You've used the word edge a number of times already in this interview, and anybody who's covered your teams or followed your teams know that your teams play with an edge. Marquette, yeah, to me, you. Is a program with great tradition. Al McGuire in 77, Dwayne Wade in 2003. You're a different type of person. You come from humble beginnings. Is a program like Virginia Tech that doesn't have nearly the basketball tradition as Marquette did a better fit for Buzz Williams considering your background and your DNA?
That's good. Thanks for the compliments. I wish that maybe I could watch a game or coach a game and kind of sit on the sideline and act semi-normal. It's all just really important to me. And it's not really important to me as a coach. It's just really important to me as a person. And I think as my career unfolds as a coach, I hope that my legacy has nothing to do with how many games I won or what type of strategist I was or wasn't. I hope that it has to do with he really cared and he really loved me and he really tried to help me in every facet of my life. And that's not just our players. That's our staff. That's the people that I come in contact with. And I never knew when I started as a manager, John, at a junior college, I never knew that that coach that I was working for would be living with me half of the year. He's 79 years old, and he's been on my staff ever since I took the job at Marquette. I could have never envisioned anything like what has transpired over the last 9 complete seasons. That's not me. That's a lot of people that have helped me. That's a lot of people that I owe. And so my responsibility is to help whoever it is that I can help. And so did I fit Marquette? I don't know. I've read everything there is to read about Coach McGuire. I listened to every cassette tape of people that had recorded him. I think what Coach Crean did, Mike Dean won 100 games there in 5 years. What Kevin O'Neill, who I think is one of the top 5 coaches in the world today, did, who took Marquette after it had been kind of down to the Sweet 16 in his 5th year there. I think there's been a lot of really good coaches that have coached at Marquette. And I'll also say this, I think Seth Greenberg did a great job at Virginia Tech. And I think the situation that James Johnson was left, I think he did a really good job considering the state of the program when he got it. I think it's always bigger, John, than the coach. I think the reason why things have turned the way that they have here is because there's alignment with Whit Babcock, the AD. I think there's alignment with Dr. Sands, the president. And I think that it has worked. Dr. Sands was here, whatever it was, 2 months, got hired 2 months before I got the job. Whit was hired a month and a half before he hired me. I think all of that, the longer I've done this, that alignment is so important. I do think that who I am and how I was raised probably resonates in Blacksburg, but I also thought that it did in the blue-collar community of Milwaukee. And so I'm not saying that who I am is right. I'm not even saying that who I am is wrong. I just, like you said initially, I'm different, and I think that that's weird in some ways, but I think in some ways it's probably the right way.
Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Hokies go to the postseason NIT last year, will be picked somewhere in the middle of the pack of the ACC prior to the 16-17 season. Buzz, you had great success at Marquette when it was in the old Big East. Now you're in what I call the new Big East, which is the ACC. Now, my question to you is this, since you've coached in both, what are the biggest differences that you found from the ACC versus the old Big East?
Yeah, that's good. When people have talked about what's the ACC like, I'm like, it's like the league that I coached in at Marquette for 5 out of the 6 years I was the head coach, because that's what it is. It's the depth of the league, but it's the depth of the talent on each of the teams in the league, and it's the depth of the coaching for those teams. And, you know, in the history of college basketball, I don't think it'll ever happen again. There's never been 4 Hall of Famers coaching in the same league. And, you know, the ACC has produced more NBA players than any other league, and it's not close. And I think that will continue. And I know a lot of coaches, all coaches, should hype up their league. But when you look at the ACC, I don't think that there's any comparison. I think that the one difference that I would say, John, is each year in the Big East, your mirror opponents were not decided until September. Mm-hmm. And that was based on a formula that Mr. Gavitt and OJ and all of those guys had determined. That is not the case in the ACC. They're already preset. And I don't know how times will change, whether we stay at 18 games or does that always stay the same. But, you know, the four mirror opponents in our league are already planned out for the next decade. And so that's really the only difference that I've noticed. You know, the physicality of the league, the talent, the home court advantage slash how difficult it is to win on the road. A lot of that is really the same. I think what it does contribute to is a short shelf life. It's really hard to be good year after year after year in a league that is so prominent, just like the old Big East was. I think it's the same here. You know, we're supposed to be the bottom of the league.
Right.
And hopefully we're not, but I think that's what makes it so competitive is, you know, who is an annual blue blood, they're going to be at the top and everybody's fighting to move up the ladder. And that's what makes it so hard because everybody's fighting the same fight.
Buzz, 11 Big East teams made the NCAA tournament in 2011. You were the 11th yep. team in at Marquette, and you went to the Sweet yep. 16. Syracuse last year was the 9th best team in the ACC, and it went to the Final Four. I've studied your league from soup to nuts. I think the ACC next year, 1 through 12, is as competitive as a league as I've seen in the last 10 years in college basketball. When you look yep. at things, how many bids do you think the ACC can project for 2017 and then beyond?
Well, I don't know if history is always the right barometer, but when you look at the year that we went and we were the 11 seed, in my opinion, one of the pieces of evidence that I think, John, that the committee had to look at was we beat UConn at UConn. So if you're going to let UConn in, obviously Marquette beating UConn at UConn had to be very helpful. And I think that when you talk about Syracuse, this past season, Syracuse and Pitt both finished 9-9. We finished ahead of them. I understand that Louisville wasn't able to go.
Right.
But the year before that, Syracuse wasn't able to go. So in those 2 years, if Syracuse would have been able to go 2 years ago, if Louisville would have been able to go this year, obviously our number of at-large would have for sure increased by one. I don't think we were ever in the mix to go to the NCAA tournament, even though we were 10-8 in the league. That had to do with our non-conference schedule wasn't great. And we didn't have great success with a schedule that wasn't great. And so I think that when there is such depth in a league like ours, particularly this year, like you're talking about, how can there be any separation? Some of it will occur in league play because some of the schools, teams that you're thinking are going to make it aren't. But there's always going to be a team or two that's not on your list that is going to maybe make it, which in some regards probably was us last year. But what prevented that of ever even being in the discussion of being on the bubble was what we did in non-conference. And I think it was a huge lesson for our guys. Not that they didn't understand why losing to Alabama State, and they beat us from start to finish. But it's not, well, we lost one, we'll get it back, because you have to have more than just one to get it back. And so I think your non-conference schedule becomes important, but then I also think that that's why the mirror opponents become really important too. When you look at who Syracuse's mirror opponents were this past season, they won at Duke. Man, that's great evidence in front of the committee.
Right.
They did only go 9-9, but when you get a win at Duke, I know it's only one game, but it helps even more. And so there's a lot of variables, and when you're trying to be an at-large team, because there's such competition not only in your league but across the country, that's why every game is of the utmost, and that's why it's not college football, but you can't just play 12 guaranteed games and go, okay, well, whatever we do in the league will be good enough. I think there's too much competition nationally in order for that statement to be true anymore.
And there's competition, too, in terms of the way people are going to structure their different alignments for their own respective teams. Because, you know, a coach told me time ago, the best coaches always copy from, you know, their counterparts. And you were ahead of the curve probably 5 or 6 years ago, because to me, you were the first guy that really played small. Now, part of it was because you had to at Marquette, but as you've seen basketball transition and see teams use two forwards up front now versus having maybe a traditional big man, do you feel that you had a premonition as to where the game was going, or do you feel that was just the hand that you were dealt?
I think it was a little of both. You know, year number two at Marquette, our five was our Hayward, and he was on a good day with inner soles in his shoes. He was 6'5", but you know, we were picked preseason 12th in the Big East at that time, and we finished 5th, which was the exact same record that we finished with the year before when we had the leading scorer ever in the history of Marquette, et cetera. A lot of those guys that are still, Wesley Matthews is still playing. And so it changed how we had to play. And I think as a coach, it changed my philosophy on how I wanted to play. And I think as I've matured, what it's changed even more is how I want to recruit. And I'm not saying that I'm Steve Kerr or Mark Jackson, and this is how Golden State plays, and this is what we should do. I'm not near that smart. But I think the guys that have had the most success, if you don't have a dominant big, the teams that put the most players that can pass, dribble, and shoot, and have the versatility to guard a ball screen however you want to guard it, are the ones that have had the most success. And I think even now, you know, we're in the middle of our second and third evaluation period in July. And that's the one thing that I really talk to our staff about here, is we have to be careful that we don't misevaluate, because there's a lot of coaches now or people that that want to help us maybe that say, oh, that's the next Jimmy Butler, that's the next Jay Crowder, that's the next Wesley Matthews. And you have to be careful that you don't misevaluate that just because they're 6'6", or just because they're 6'7", and long, that they have the skill set to be as versatile. And I'm not saying that I'm right, but I am saying, like, Zach Lede, Zach Lede fits us perfectly in that he can pass, dribble, and shoot. He's not the best athlete. He's not the best at anything, but because of what he can do on both ends of the floor, it allows our team to somewhat morph into whichever way we want to be. And when Chris Clark came back off of his injury, missed the first 12 games in conference play last year, he didn't know. He missed 12 games, John, and he missed 32 practices. He was there every day. He couldn't participate. And so he didn't know a play. And so we put in, like, the three plays you used to run when you were a grade school coach. And I said, Chris, these are the three plays we'll run when you're here. When you don't know what to do, if the ball came from the right, pass it to the left. And if the ball came from the left, just pass it to the right. Anytime you don't know what to do, just do that. And we ended up playing our small ball group. We started playing that over the last six games when he came back. We went 5-1, and we were playing with Zach Lede at our five, 12 to 14 minutes a game. And that was about what Chris physically had the ability to do at that time. And that's when we played it. And we became hard to guard. That doesn't mean that we didn't struggle to guard the opponent. But I just think that as I've matured, I'm much more comfortable. And it's kind of like anything else that happens in your life, something that you think is bad turns out to be good. And we were supposed to be so bad in year number two and ended up being 12-6 in the league. And we were just playing with a bunch of guys, pretty much none of which had a position, but their versatility on both ends allowed us to cause problems.
Well, and that's a big reason why I like your team so much heading into this season. And it's going to be a little unique for Virginia Tech, to have some buzz in basketball heading into a new year. But what a lot of people don't know is that 2 years ago, maybe your best first-year player was Ahmed Hill. He didn't play last year. He's back. And there's a player that you have, Ty Outlaw, who everybody in your program raves about, and he's finally healthy. You've coached a lot of teams that have played in the NCAA tournament. I know it's early, but this is what we've become right now in the media. As you sit here and you think about your team and the possibilities on paper, do you think Virginia Tech's team next year is a team that should play in the NCAA tournament?
Well, I think on paper now, going into year three, I think you can see that we have improved. I think when you look at the depth of our team at each position, I think when you look at the classification of not stacking guys on top of one another, I think it looks as though we're trying to build a foundation, John, that can be sustainable. And I think, you know, when you think about any sport, what Coach Belichick has done with the Patriots back when I was a kid growing up in Texas, what they were doing with the Cowboys, there's a reason why teams or businesses stay successful. And there's also a reason why the ones that don't have success, there's a reason why they don't too. And I think that the foundation that we've tried to build relative to the decisions that our staff has had to make, the culture we've tried to instill within our program and what we want to be about, I do think that we're ahead in that some of those investments have somewhat matured faster than normal. And having Ahmed back, he's the toughest guy in our program. He represents everything that we want to be about. He's not the most talented guy, but he's the toughest guy. And I think that Ty, as a JUCO guy, you know, it's always beneficial when there's a redshirt year. But I think when you're a junior college guy, he wasn't able to practice, but he was able to watch, and I think he was able to learn. And having those two guys definitely helps us. But I think we're going in the right direction. And I think that I'm not trying to hedge the bet, and I'm not trying to not answer your question. But I think for us to continue to be in a position that hopefully we become sustainable, the best way to answer that question is today, are we doing what we need to do to be in that position in March? It's been a long time since Virginia Tech played in the NCAA tournament, and we have a team full of kids that have never played in an NCAA tournament game. Mm-hmm. And so are we going in the right direction? I think so, but it will be, if and when it happens, it will be historic in some regards that we make it to the tournament, but it'll be because of our focus of just getting better today. And I think that that's what we're all pushing towards. That's where we want to go, just like every other coach and every other program. But we got a lot of stuff that needs to happen between now and then. Never thought we would lose Ahmed. When we signed Ty, obviously we had immediate time for him. And so this time last year in July, I was in a really bad frame of mind because that was 60 out of 200 minutes that I thought we had that we lost. But I think because we lost it, those 60 minutes were dispersed amongst the rest of our guys. And I think they're better because of it. Now we need to add those guys to the mix, and we need to absorb those minutes in the right way and figure out how collectively this group can exceed the chemistry that we had last year.
Final thing for me, Buzz. You've told me on several occasions that you would have been happy if you were a high school coach. You get the Marquette job, you have great success there. You take the Virginia Tech job, you're supposed to be irrelevant. You're relevant. We're talking right now. You don't sleep much. Yep. You write in a journal relentlessly. You're always consumed with getting better. Does Buzz Williams, whether he's working out before practice or driving to or from work, ever stop, take a deep breath, and say, you know, I've made it?
No. I mean this. I'll get emotional, so it'll be the shortest answer. It's bigger than any dream, John, that I've ever had. And so as I have grown, you know, I still view myself as the manager at Navarro College. And so to have been the youngest coach in the Big East, and then 6 years later when I get the Tech job, I'm the youngest coach in the ACC. All of that was way bigger than anything that I ever dreamed. And only God could author that. That I can't accept credit for that. I think the one thing that I've become, I do have an insatiable desire to improve in every facet of my life. I think the one thing that I've become very convicted about is I think you're really good at your job. You are. And I really admire the path that you've taken for you to become relevant. And so in my heart, I'm convicted to use the platform, whatever that is, that I have to see if I could help you, but not to help you selfishly, to help you unselfishly. Like, hey, I'm cheering for you, John. I want you to make it, but I want you to make it where everything was hard. Like you had to do it on your own and you had to have people help. And that's the way I am now. I used to think that, well, if I, you know, the day after I was hired at Marquette in the largest font you could find on a newspaper on the front page, not the sports page, it said, "Who the hell is Buzz?" question mark. And I had an edge about proving that I could do the job. And then it was, well, if I took the team to an NCAA tournament, that will show them. And it was all unspoken. And then it was like, well, if we win a game in the NCAA tournament, well, if I recruit and sign and coach a kid that turns into an NBA player, that'll make everybody be quiet. And right. I was focused on these goals that were all selfish based. And what I realized is that was seeping into my blood and it was seeping into my soul where it was all selfish derived. And I don't ever stop and say, wow, I made it. What I do though, more than ever, is I stop and say, thank you. Thank you for this chance. Thank you for this opportunity. Help me to handle it in the right way. Help me to be maybe a conduit to somebody else having a story that's bigger than their own and living in a dream bigger than any of the ones that they had as a kid. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And it used to be like, man, I got to figure out this out of bounds play because this one's going to score right here. And now I'm like, no, I really want to figure out how to help those kids that are running that out of bounds play on something that's bigger than the out of bounds play. And so I think I just say thank you a lot more. I sleep less, I work more, but I think that I'm a lot better husband. I'm a lot better dad. I'm a lot better staff member. I'm a lot better teammate. Because I think that on the path of getting better, on that path, it's not a goal. There's not a finish line. It's just the path to keep going. And when you say get better, there's always ways to get better. And so, you know, whoever said it, the road to success is always under construction. Everybody has to define success in their own way. I don't want to be successful. I want to be significant. I want to be a significant part of helping people achieve more than they ever thought they could.
Well, Buzz, when your team is at, you know, playing against Louisville and that press is on at the first under 16 timeout, I'm sure, you know, help is going to be a major factor because of that pressure.
Man, I tell you what, I tell Coach Pitino before every game, after every game, and every time I see him, Coach, if you guys want to postpone our game, we'll play next year. We'll do that because they're a hard team to play for, team to prepare for.
That's why I brought it up. Buzz, we appreciate your time during the July recruiting period. Stay healthy. I'll always be in touch and really looking forward to covering your team this year.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on.
All right, you guys, Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams. We will break down the rest of the ACC from soup to nuts when we return here on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'd like to thank Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. We also want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. And now it's time to break down the ACC from soup to nuts even more. We move forward and proceed with who is ranked where.
John's ACC Power Rankings.
Number one, I've got Duke. Number two, I've got Virginia. Cavs with a great 1-2 punch of London Parentis and Memphis transfer Austin Nichols. Carolina at three, Louisville at four. Two breakout guys to watch for the Cardinals, Donovan Mitchell and Dang Adele. Five is Virginia Tech. Six is Clemson. Clemson has, to me, maybe the best player in college basketball that nobody's talking about in Jahron Blossom game. Tigers will also add three transfers that will have major roles. Shelton Mitchell from Vanderbilt, also Marquise Reed from Robert Morris, and Elijah Thomas from Texas A&M. Eli Thomas eligible in December. Florida State 7, Miami 8, Syracuse is 9, NC State is 10. Pitt is 11. Panthers with four starters back for Kevin Stallings' first year in the Steel City, but still no concrete replacement yet for sturdy point guard James Robinson. Notre Dame is 12. Wake Forest is 13. BC 14. Georgia Tech 15. Now, why is Notre Dame number 12? Look, I think when I look at these power rankings, I think 5 through 12 in this league is interchangeable. There's not that much different between Virginia Tech, Clemson, Florida State, Miami, Syracuse, NC State, Pitt, and Notre Dame. But Notre Dame did lose Demetrius Jackson and Zach August. I know that the year before they lost Jaron Grant and Pat Connaughton. It doesn't make a lot of sense to pick a Mike Bray coach team 12th, but I looked at everybody else and I thought that everybody else had a little bit more than Notre Dame. But Mike Bray has always found a way to get his teams to improve over the course of the season. I'm sure that will happen again this year. Time now to find out who are the top five players in the ACC heading into next season.
John's ACC preseason first team.
We start with Grayson Allen at Duke, Dwayne Bacon at Florida State, Jason Tatum I'm going to put on from Duke, who's a freshman, also Harry Giles from Duke, and Jahron Blossom game from Clemson. So Duke has three of the five ACC preseason first-team players. That should reiterate just how talented this Blue Devil team is. And now time for the ACC preseason player of the year.
John's ACC preseason player of the year.
It's Grayson Allen for Duke. It could easily be Jason Tatum or Harry Giles, but Allen is the returning veteran for Duke. He's somebody who, again, has already won a national championship and had a big hand in the Blue Devils winning the 2015 national championship by his performance in the Final Four against Michigan State and Wisconsin. Time now for my ACC sleeper.
John's ACC sleeper.
I'm going to go with Florida State for my ACC preseason sleeper for a number of reasons. First off is this. Last year, the Seminoles won 20 games, and two of their interior players who were going to play key roles, Phil Kofer and Michael Ojo, only play a combined 11 games. All 11 games were played by Kofer. Ojo did not play due to a knee injury. They're back. Leonard Hamilton also adds a one-and-done type talent in Jonathan Isaac, who is going to start at power forward. And also, you got two guys back for Florida State on the perimeter, Xavier Raton-Mays and Dwayne Bacon, who have a legitimate chance of being drafted next June. Also, in terms of guys who can be drafted next June in the 2017 NBA draft, a lot of first-year players.
John's freshman to watch in the ACC.
All right, we're going to look at 15 guys right now to watch here for the ACC freshman list. Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, Frank Jackson, and Marquise Bolden for Duke. Jonathan Isaac from Florida State, who I told you about. Three from Carolina, Tony Bradley, Brandon Robinson, and Seventh Woods. Tony Bradley should provide some solid insurance up front on the low block. VJ King from Louisville. Miami has two on the list. Bruce Brown and DeJuan Hewell both have the chance to be starters for the Hurricanes under Jim Larrañaga. Tyus Battle, the 6'6 wing from New Jersey for Syracuse. Dennis Smith from NC State. Omar Yurtseven from NC State as well, and Kyle Guy from Virginia. I wrote about Kyle Guy this past week in my column for CBSSports.com. Tough, confident, even a little cocky at 6'3", can play either guard spot. I think he'll be a big, big piece for Virginia off the bench moving forward in 16-17. Of course, Tony Bennett returning, two starters in the backcourt, Devin Hall and also London Parentis. Time now to look at which transfers could have a big impact in the ACC.
John's transfers to watch in the ACC.
All right, five guys who you're probably going to have a good idea to know. Austin Nichols from Virginia. Now we got two from NC State. Torin Dorn from Charlotte, averaged 12 points a game a couple of years ago at Charlotte. And also Terry Henderson from West Virginia, who didn't play much last year due to injury. And two other impact ACC transfers to watch. They both play for Syracuse. Colorado State's John Gillen and Pascal Chukwu from Syracuse, who again came over from Providence. So, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of Syracuse's depth in the middle. But I know talking to Syracuse's staff, they feel that Pascal Chukwu should play a major role defensively. Five under-the-radar transfers to watch. Tony Hicks at Louisville, a transfer from Penn who should be a good reserve guard. Brian Angola-Rodas, a junior college kid from Florida State, has a chance to replace Malik Beasley in the starting lineup. And then three guys from Clemson that I think have a real chance to help Brad Brunell get the Tigers back to the NCAA tournament. Eli Thomas, Marquise Reed, and Shelton Mitchell. We got you set with freshmen. We've got you set with transfers. Now, time to find out who's going to break out.
John's ACC breakout players for next season.
Franklin Howard at Syracuse is an easy pick, in my opinion. Jim Boeheim told me last year to practice that he always felt that Franklin Howard would turn into a pretty good player. He's got the opportunity this year. He'll compete with John Gillen for time at point guard. Chris Clark from Virginia Tech, Donovan Mitchell from Louisville, Matt Farrell from Notre Dame, who again played a big hand in Notre Dame getting to the Elite Eight, was really good giving Demetrius Jackson extra space in the perimeter, and Isaiah Wilkins for Virginia. I think right now, as you look at Virginia being a team that, you know, is going to compete again with Duke for the ACC regular season title, I think at 4-5, you're going to see Isaiah Wilkins, and you're also going to see Austin Nichols. The ACC, again, has been the best league in college basketball the last couple of seasons. There's no doubt about that. I think it will continue again next year. I think 8 to 10 teams will be right there from this league to get to the NCAA tournament. We will break down the Big Ten next week as we continue with our off-season previews and breakdowns. We'll be back in 7 days. Same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.